And there we go, everyone. We are back again for another fantastic conversation on Friday Night Counterattack. This is the podcast you're listening to with the most diverse topics of the week in football media this week, because we are covering AFCON, we are covering the Champions League, we are covering the Premier League, we are covering La Liga, we are covering Serie A, and we are covering the Bundesliga as well. I know we spoke about it last week. Great conversation with Sarah last week, with Leon last week as well. We've got another fantastic journalist from across in the continent. And of course, we've got our favourite journalist from across the pond in Sarah Pararia. Sarah, how are you doing today? It's good to see you, my friend. And opposites in terms of shirts today as well. We didn't get the memo.
I shouldn't even be talking to you right now. You were trying to hide it too from the camera. And now this is crazy.
I've adjusted the camera to make it look like an Adidas shirt. So I'm perfectly fine with it, which is not bad at all. But it's good to see you. How are you doing this week, my friend?
I'm good. The Champions League is back. In fact, we are watching live as we record. So
we don't need Valentine's Day. We don't need Valentine's Day. Champions League is back. It's crazy.
Yes, you have the Munich game on, I have, and Lazio, of course, I have PSG and Real Sociedad. So exciting. I love it. I'm so happy. Midweek footy, get me going.
That's what we like to see as well. There's football every day this season. And I'm just thinking, we just can't keep up, but we keep up with the best of our abilities. And someone who caught up with the January transfer market in such a great way, I had to invite him 2 weeks after the deadline, just so I know he recovered from his studies and from his amazing work in the January transfer window. It is our good friend from Italy, Luca Bendoni. Is it Bendoni?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks
a lot. I tried to put the Italian twang on that. Was that okay?
Pronunciation. You can see the books from the study and finally I recovered some mental stability after the transfer session. Yeah. So fantastic. I'm good.
It's good to hear it again. Fantastic, Luca. We're going to be asking you all about Lazio's new winger, Wonder Kid. We're going to be talking to you about Bologna. We're going to be talking to you especially about your updates in the January transfer window as well, how it compared to last season in terms of a lot less spending across Europe due to FFP as well and the inflation in a lot of football players across Europe. I mean, we still wouldn't sell Anthony Martial from Manchester United, but we're going to have to wait and see if he gets a new contract or not. But we won't talk about Anthony Martial anymore today, which is what I like to hear about. And what I like to talk about especially is I think it's not escaped from me just yet how amazing the African Cup of Nations was. We covered it every single week when we're on the podcast. We covered it on our social medias. It was a blast of a tournament. There was fireworks every single game. There was so many upsets. There's ups, there was downs, there was drama, there was disappointments. And Sarah Pararia, that was just the beginning game. That was just the opening game of the tournament as well. How did you find it watching AFCON from Canada? And how do you find it with the eventual winners? And especially my second choice, Ivory Coast, in our sweepstakes as well. So I'm quite happy that I got very lucky in the sweepstakes draw, which wasn't rigged at all on our Friday Night Counterattack group chat. How did you find AFCON and what was your favorite moments of the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever AFCON comes back around, I always remember how chaotic it is and just how, you know, the unexpected is kind of the expected in a sense, right? Like anything that you think isn't going to happen will. And it's just so fun and entertaining. I think even if you're not a football fan, you can watch AFCON and be entertained because it's just ridiculous. And yes, we saw hosts Ivory Coast win in Ivory Coast. Are they the best team in Africa? I don't think so. Are they maybe even in the top five? I still don't think so. But what a story they had, right? You're losing 4-0 to Equatorial Guinea. You're sacking your manager.
At home,
of course. You're sacking your manager heading into the round of 16. You're trying to hire Herve Renard on loan. You beat Senegal in penalties. You beat Mali in the 123rd minute of extra time. Like, it was just everything kept going against them and they somehow kept going through. I think there was a lot of luck involved. But that being said, this is why we love a tournament, because these things happen and anyone can win. So yeah, so fun.
I mean, we can't go... I want to talk about so many things with AFCON, but I think we'd have to make it a whole AFCON experience podcast because we spoke about it so much. And we have to get Dennis from Our African Football back on later this season to review it as well. But one of my favorite moments, literally, like you said, Africans came together in such a great way and the world came together to watch this game. And what really annoyed me from my point of view is the fact that in England, especially, all normal football fans were always just looking down on it. They're looking down on AFCON. They're like, oh, my favourite player's off to AFCON. He's going to get injured. I want to get him out of the tournament early. I don't want him to come back with an injury, etc., etc., etc. But for someone like me, who supports Man United, and I'm watching Andre Onana, Luca knows how good and bad Andre Onana has been recently for Cameroon. Sofiane Amrabat as well. And you're seeing some of these players and you're just there like, I couldn't care less. Try and win the tournament. Try and win something. Gain some experience. And when you're seeing it for someone, especially like Simon Adingra, who we spoke about earlier this season as one of the ones to watch in the Premier League this season, how he came in to score that injury time equaliser in the semi-final for Ivory Coast, and how he set up Sebastian Haller for the goal, the winning goal of the tournament in the final of AFCON as well. It goes to show how talented some of these players actually are when they don't get the hype and the praise that they deserve in the Premier League as well. And we can see that in terms of how Sebastian Haller, what a story that was as well. Luke, I'm sure you've heard about it as well, how Sebastian Haller suffering from cancer over the last 2 years as well. He recently came back into professional football. He was still playing at Borussia Dortmund, in and out of the side. And the fact that he then got called up to the AFCON, which was a great surprise in his own. He didn't start the tournament. He was coming off the bench gradually. And then when the new coach came in, Emers Faiz, who will be going down as maybe one of the coaches of the season, maybe coach of the year, I would say, for coming in with no real elite coaching experience and winning the tournament was insane. But back to Sebastian Haller, scoring the goal in the semi-final, scoring that goal in the final to win it. He just looks cold as ice when he's scoring as well. And there is a bold claim as well that he's going to go down greater than Didier Drogba as one of the greatest strikers in AFCON history, because Didier Drogba didn't do it for AFCON, in AFCON for the Ivory Coast. He was amazing at Chelsea, amazing at Galatasaray and Marseille. But for the national team, he did disappoint. He didn't do it at the World Cup. He didn't do it at AFCON. And the times when Didier Drogba wasn't there, Sebastian Haller was there, which is crazy to see.
It's the magic of football, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's just
those crazy stories that you'll tell your kids and make history. Those stories that makes history, basically. And everybody in the nation, in the country, but also I feel in the world, will remember this story, beating cancer and then scoring the winner in such an important game for your nation. Something incredible. And I'm very happy for him, also as a football fan and for his person, generally speaking, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Like the fact that he had to go through so much mentally to even come back into professional football, let alone just playing for his country again, that goes to show what a mentality Sebastian Haller really has as well. And one player I do want to shout out from the Ivory Coast as well, Sarah, is Frank Kessié, who's now playing in Saudi Arabia. He was very, very good for AC Milan for a good couple of years in the midfield and went to Barcelona. I thought he was going to stay there for a good number of years as well. But he had a fantastic tournament in itself. And the fact that Ivory Coast has this squad depth about them now with Seri, with Kessié, with Fofana, Sangare as well, it goes to show that when you've got squad depth in AFCON, sometimes it does work to your benefit as well. But what did you really like about watching Frank Kessié kind of ball out once again? Because it had been a while since we've seen him. And we did mention earlier in the tournament as well, a lot of the AFCON players that went to Saudi Arabia, they didn't perform to their usual standards, but Frank Kessié, you could argue, did.
Yeah, with Frank Kessié, I think the thing is he's always been that force in the middle. Like, he's a proper bulldozer. When he was at Milan, when he was at Barca too, he wasn't really bad for Barca at all. Honestly, it's just Barca, with their financial situation, had to release certain players, and he happened to be one of them. But it's like he still has that fight in him. He is such a beast in the middle of the pitch. If you're going down the middle of the pitch and Frank Kessié is coming at you, I'd be scared. He's massive, and he knows, like, he's maintained that sort of fitness and strength that is really good, because we did see a lot of Saudi Arabian players underperform like we expected, but Frank Kessié wasn't one of them. And I think it's great for him to have that story, because I think after leaving Milan and what he was there, he might have been forgotten by some people, and now people will remember him again. He's great.
Luca, what did Frank Kessié mean to AC Milan fans when you were watching Frank Kessié kind of be one of the most dominant midfielders in Serie A? Because he worked really well with Bennacer in that double pivot in the midfield under Stefan Pioli. What do you, AC Milan really miss from Frank Kessié being in that midfield? I know he's gone for a few years, but do you think there's some...
No, but it just 1 year and a half, you know? Yeah. He has stayed here in Milano for a while. He won a Scudetto as a protagonist, as a main character. He was the penalty taker. He was a beast, as Sarah said. He was really physical player, but also he could recover the ball. He was still composed on the ball. at Barcelona, he decided a Clásico, so they will remember him pretty much because it's the most important match in the season for Barcelona. And then Barcelona went to win the league, so it was an important game, and he scored the clutchest goal in the season, maybe. So yeah, Brancisi in Milan, in AC Milan, and he was remembered by the fans as il presidente, means the president. So the center, the whole center of the team,
he went was, around him.
Yeah. But then he said, when he was at the Olympics, I think, or at some tournaments, he said, as I come back to Milano, I will sign the contract. Then a saga started. He didn't extend the contract as Barcelona was there with a proposal. And we should not forget that he is 27 still at the moment. He's not like 35. So we shouldn't be surprised by his physicality. We shouldn't be surprised by his ability and still the fact that he is dominant because he's in the whole middle of his career.
It was more his match fitness that we were surprised about with a lot of the players that played in Saudi Arabia. Like Mahrez was benched for Algeria. Mane only had one goal in the tournament as well. Edouard Mendy as well wasn't as sharp as he normally was. But that's what we were surprised about originally. But Frank Kessié grew into that tournament really well at AFCON as well. So that's what we were more surprised about in terms of not really talking about his physicality and his presence, because that's always going to be there, like Sarah said. But it's more his match fitness that we were quite surprised about, I would say, Luca.
And I feel he could give still a lot to European football.
I agree.
Still maybe in 2-3 years, staying in Saudi Arabia for 2-3 years with his good contract, with his good, you know, also good football to share your knowledge to other people, also to relax a little bit because it has been a still tough career because he emerged as a youth player. In Atalanta, he was loaned at Cesena, so a small team in Italy. And then he came back to Atalanta. He had a breakout season that was crazy. AC Milan bought him for more than 20 million when he was very, very young. In AC Milan, he became the president, and then he was sold to Barcelona. Now he's staying in Saudi Arabia, but I feel in 2-3 years, he could still come back to European football and play here in Europe again for 3-4 more years because he has the physicality and the capability of doing it.
Absolutely, it's true. Sorry, you gave me the eyes just there. Something happened in your game at the moment because it's still 0-0 for Lazio and Bayern Munich.
Yeah, it's been happening. Takefusa Kubo just wide of the net here. Real Sociedad have been dominating this game, though. I'll tell you that much. I'm telling you, I have a feeling.
It was Beraldo's debut as well in the Champions League, the left back for PSG. So Takefusa Kubo should be rubbing his hands after being eliminated from the Asia Cup with Japan in the quarterfinals as well. So we need to see the best of Takefusa Kubo. Our reputation on this podcast is building on it as well. We can't have our co-host Suki saying, yeah, La Liga's crap, Takefusa Kubo's crap. I'm like, no, we need him to do well for our sake more than anything. But yeah. Great insight into AFCON as well. Some of the great players that we got to see, they didn't really turn up, unfortunately. Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Riyad Mahrez, they didn't really turn up, unfortunately. It was more about the great teams and the great coaches that we got to appreciate. And the great fans as well. The fans were incredible from every kind of game that we got to watch as well. But moving on to our club talk as well. So Luca famously doesn't support a football club. So we'll be talking to him all about Serie A in a moment or two. But sorry, we're going to start off with Manchester United because Manchester United got to play. We won the Friday night counter-attack derby of beating Aston Villa 2-1 away from home. And Aston Villa's now looking a bit shaky. I was hoping Salim would be joining us for our conversation this week, but he may have Gareth bailed on us because he doesn't want to talk about Unai Emery losing the home record after losing to Chelsea at home in the FA Cup and losing to Man United at home as well. But Manchester United are looking a lot more promising going forward. I'm not saying we're going to make the top four. I'm not saying we're going to end up winning the FA Cup, but I am saying that we are looking promising and there is some hope in our results that we're getting. Not so much in our style of play, not so much in our injury list as well, because we continue to get injury after injury after injury. Lisandro Martinez a couple weeks ago, Luke Shaw this week, and you're quite worried about how Manchester United will carry on. But we do have quite a few easy games coming up. We've got Luton away, which should be 3 points. And I say should be on the podcast because more times than not when I predict it, we are right. But if I'm saying it on the group chat, it doesn't come true, which is not great at all. But the main thing I want to talk about from Manchester United this week, Sarah, is the fact that Sir Jim Radcliffe has officially taken over 25% in a minority stake in Manchester United. And he's now bringing in his own members of staff. He's changing the culture and a lot of routines at Manchester United, which I am really, really excited about as well. There was a time when you and I were speaking earlier this season about how ownership tends to ruin clubs. Luca, you can hear all about AC Milan, Inter Milan, Juventus, their ownership models ruining the club and forcing them to go down. We've seen Inter Milan suffer from so many losses this season as well, in terms of having to sell Onana. Recently, they may have to sell Barella and Martinez next summer as well.
But they have an amazing management in replacing them.
Exactly.
And crazy, as they bought Onana for free and then they sold him for 60 million and they bought Sommer for basically a small fee from Bayern Munich and he's performing very well. They bought Thuram for free, Pavard for a 30 million investment. That seems a very good investment for the kind of player he is. And also Bisek, who is an amazing talent. You should get a scout hands about him. Absolutely. Jan Orel Bisek, because he's a top player from Germany, center back for Inter, right center back. He could play also on the left. He's a physical beast, 196, I think. He also scored against Lecce. And they bought him for 9 million release clause from a Danish club called Aarhus. And I think if they want to sell him this year, and they don't want to sell him next summer, of course, they want to make a 2-3-4 year project. I don't know how much. But if they had to sell him, it would have been at least 30-40 mil for the kind of player he's already, just after 6-7 months. Okay,
It's absolutely true as well, because when we get onto Barcelona, there's a topic or two I want to talk about with Sara as well. But the fact that with Sir Jim Radcliffe, he is bringing in players that can actually, not bringing in players, but is bringing in the recruitment staff that has actually been needed for a good 15 years at Manchester United. You need a recruitment head of recruitment, you need a head of technical director, you need someone who can be the head of scouting, the head of medical. And we're getting the CEO from Manchester City as well. Omar Berada will be our new CEO. We're getting Jean-Claude Blanc, who used to work with Juventus and with PSG as well. It looks like the Avengers are being assembled at Manchester United, but not on the pitch, in the boardroom. And it's good to see that there has been some change that has been long overdue for a good number of years as well. I should probably do like a proper insight video onto this later on. But I'm really excited because there's a lot more excitement in Sara's game that's happening right now. What happened in the game just happened? So see that score?
No. I'm helping out what you're saying. I've just been waiting.
That's okay.
Didn't think Manchester played that well over the weekend.
No, we didn't. I mentioned that earlier just now. I said we got the result, but we didn't play that well. A lot of times when we win.
I'd trust this if I were you. This is not going to be a long-term solution, in my opinion. Also, I think Villa, give them some slack. Like, I don't think this is the be-all and end-all for Villa. I think we should still keep our eyes on them because I think they have it in them. A 1-2 bad game.
I disagree. They've got Europa Conference League coming up as well. So they're going to have to deal with a Thursday-Sunday schedule with a depleted squad due to injuries. And I think that'll be something where...
We've seen what this European schedule can do to a team like Newcastle, but also don't write off Luton just yet because we also saw what they could do at St. James's. So, yeah, I don't know. You guys also picking up those injuries in the back, and we already know Onana's, I don't want to say useless, but not very
close to useless. He's the reason we're at the Champions League, and he's the reason why my voice was broken on numerous trips to Old Trafford this season because he has been quite bad as well.
We
will see. It's just exciting to see some positive changes for a change. And so Jim Radcliffe is looking to consult with fans over a new stadium as well. So as opposed to rebuilding Old Trafford, is looking to rebuild a brand new stadium. So it's quite exciting as a Manchester United fan that there is some glimmer of hope off the pitch. And we're just having to see if Manchester United can stick to winning ways on the pitch, because Kobbie Mainoo, again, playing really well against Aston Villa. He passed the Douglas Luiz test with flying colours. Diogo Dalot getting into some good form as well with the cross. And Rasmus Højlund, 5 goals in 5 games in the Premier League for Rasmus Højlund. And I'm enjoying this because since the beginning of the season, and Luca, we spoke about this last season as well, Rasmus Højlund was one of my ones to watch last season in Serie A. And now he is shining in the Premier League. I'm expecting more from him coming forward. But before we get on to Sara's Barcelona, I wanted to kind of ask you, do you think it's quite positive to see a lot of young players coming through Serie A, coming into the Premier League and La Liga and actually shining really well? Because he was only there for a season at Atalanta, wasn't he, Luca?
Yeah, but Atalanta have a great scouting department, one of the best in the country. And also their sporting director that was famously there, Giovanni Sartori, now went to Bologna. And Bologna started shining.
Which we'll talk about that later.
Exactly. It's not a random link. Also, yeah, Rasmus Højlund, great player. They sold him for gold after just 1 year. So great move also on the market because they invested 20 mil. That for a pretty unknown guy, because at that time, of course, the great stages didn't know Højlund, even if all the scouts in the world knew him. But I mean, for the general audience, few people, sorry? And but yeah, still he was pretty unknown. And then they sold him for the triple to quadruple of what they bought him for. New players.
That's like every Manchester United deal ever. We spent 80 million on Anthony when he was probably worth 20-30 million pounds. So hopefully that's why I'm so happy, because we're not going to be overspending on players anymore with this new technical director.
Also, Dan Ashworth probably coming in. So
yes, from Newcastle.
It's not done, but it's something that is possible. And I know how Dan Ashworth works, because many people told me about. He also ran the negotiation for Tonali from AC Milan. So I met him also in Milan, just like, you know, some pictures like paparazzi thing, but after the meeting with Tonali's agents. But yeah, he's a great, great director. So Man United are implementing some new recruitment stuff that is very important in the board. And Serie A have enjoyed Man United money for a lot, because
every damn season
for free, sold for 60, Højlund for the quadruple, etc., etc. Also, Tottenham investing a lot in the Serie A, strong connection with the Serie A. You have seen Vicario shining. Yeah. You have seen Udoji doing pretty good, very good actually. And now Radu Dragusin, that will be a surprise from Genoa, a beast physically from Romania. So one to watch again, because Tottenham's recruiting in Italy is very good.
It's that Paratici link as well that they've got, which has worked so well for them in the past as well. Kulusevski was a good signing, Bentancur as well. It's worked in their favour recently, which is good to see. If only one of our co-hosts, Sara, who supports Tottenham, was on here to talk about Tottenham. Shame they're not, so we don't have to talk about Tottenham.
We'll move right along then.
We'll move right on to Barcelona. So we're on to Sara's team now. And there was a good topic of conversation last week about Manchester United and who we should really be building around, which I thought was quite good. And the fact that our audience quite liked it as well was quite enjoyable. So I'm going to flip the question to you, Sara. We've seen injuries to Gavi a lot. We've seen injuries to Pedri a lot. Lamine Yamal, still 16 years old, banging in the goals. Fantastic game to watch against Granada. Honestly, I didn't watch the full game because I was watching AFCON final, but I watched the extended highlights. And Facundo Pellistri, Man United loanee, the first away player to score at Barcelona and assist since Samuel Eto'o did for Mallorca back in the early 2000s, which is absolutely crazy. But my question to you, Sara, is with your new manager that's coming in, whoever it may be, as a fan of Barcelona, which player do you want to see the new manager build around? Who do you want them to make the poster boy? We've seen it before with Lionel Messi. We've seen it before with Ronaldinho as well. Who do you want to see the new manager build around at Barcelona, and why?
I think you have to say Frankie de Jong, because for
even with the links of him moving out this summer.
Yeah, but this is every season. Like, we've heard this before. For me, like, there are certain players on Barca that can't go, and one of them is Frankie and one of them is Ronald Araujo. But Barca being Barca, they're such a midfield team.
Yes.
That's so important to them and their history. So I think it has to be Frankie right now, and that's no shade to Gavi, Pedri, Lamine Yamal, all these young guys.
Marquee, Lewandowski, Pedro, another young guy as well.
No, I can't even talk about him. But truly, like, those guys are
going to be... He scored on the weekend as well. It was a good goal. It was a good goal.
He also absolutely bottled a shot that...
Two chances he missed. He missed two chances.
Kid would shoot. So for me, I think it has to be Frankie, just because of his position, how long he's been there. He has some seniority now. The Gavis, the Pedris, they'll all still be there, and it will be their role shortly. But in the present moment, it has to be Frankie for me.
Nah, that's fair enough. I'm glad to hear it as well. And are you looking forward to a next couple run of games? I don't know who you've got on the weekend. Is it Alaves you've got on the weekend?
No, I think we play Getafe. Let me check.
Getafe. But before after your La Liga game on the weekend, you've got the tough test of Napoli away, I believe, in the Champions League.
Celta this weekend.
That would be fun. You're looking forward to the Napoli game.
Listen, Barca and Napoli, so similar in their seasons this year. Both of them are underperforming after they both won the league last year. So it's going to be interesting. As much as people keep telling me, oh, Barca can beat Napoli, I said, okay, watch a Barcelona game and then tell me. Because the game against Granada, they should have won.
It was frustrating to watch, man. I'm insulted. I'm insulted as a neutral fan.
I felt, because for the first time in actually a while, I said this, but there were glimpses of that really, really good football Barca used to play. The old classic tiki-taka, the vintage football. There was a play with Frankie de Jong, Pedri, and Joao Cancelo. And it was like, if they scored that goal, it would have been the goal of the season across all top five leagues. Like, it was just brilliant. So seeing that, they're fighting, they're scoring the goals, but then they have blips where they're just, ah, it's okay. Well, no, we're not going to chase him down the pit. Oh, he got by me. You know, the defender will get him. And this is really frustrating because Barca, the ability to win a game is there, but so is the ability to lose the game for them. And so with Napoli, yeah, Napoli don't look so good for sure. But at this point, anybody can beat Barcelona. We're talking about Granada, the 20th place team in La Liga.
Please. Yeah, the 19th now as well after that point, which is crazy to think about.
For sure, Napoli is better. For sure. Like, we're talking about the likes of Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Like, he's such a top baller. I know Osimhen is going to be tired, but...
Yeah, Luca, I found someone who can say Kvicha Kvaratskhelia properly as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Great pronunciation.
We've improved. Not Georgian, but here in Italy, we get to pronounce this name a lot of times.
Kvicha Kvaratskhelia like as well.
Kvicha or something, but we are still good. I pronounce Kvara simply because it's easier. I watched him live at San Siro last week. Pretty good game. What I can tell you from Napoli is that now with Mazzarri, they tend to play the new manager that came in, former manager also 10 years ago, Cavani, Lavezzi, that time, Zemaili, Inler, that time of Napoli. They're playing with solid lines in the back, you know, waiting and then counter-attack. They didn't have Osimhen against AC Milan because he was still involved in the AFCON, but they will probably recover him for the Barcelona match. That is in 1 week, and Osimhen in counter-attack is one of the most one of the biggest threats in world football, because I mean
that's one of the duels I want to see.
Vara starts running and then cross to Osimhen, it's deadly combo. AC Milan won the match pretty much deserving it, but it was a balanced match, so Napoli could have drawn it or also maybe win it, because it was a close one. Close call, to be honest. So, yeah, want to watch Napoli-Barcelona.
Probably one of the biggest matches
alongside Inter-Atletico.
Yeah, these are the two biggest matches. Sorry, Hams, really quickly.
Go for it.
In the round of 16. But this is exactly how you beat Barcelona, always. Even before, when Barcelona were, you know, the best football club in the world, is the counter, playing this counter, this, you know, drawing them in with a really, you know, further back defense, and then a long ball down. This is exactly, I think Napoli is going to win this game, if I'm honest with you. I'm not feeling so confident, and especially what you just said, perfect.
Now, there's a chance in the Bayern game, but it's been quite a dull 0-0 so far, so I was just reacting to that. So still 0-0, nothing's happened for Lazio. Lazio doing quite well defensively, so it's good to see, which we will talk about later. But again, for Barcelona versus Napoli, my prediction, well actually it's not a prediction, but just as a fan, Ronald Araujo versus Victor Osimhen, Jules Koundé versus Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Those are the matchups you want to see in the Champions League, in the modern Champions League, because you've got the champions of Italy versus the champions of Spain. Let's not diet down due to form. It's actually going to be a really big game in the Champions League, and it's going to be a very tough tie for both teams, because when you're thinking about it, just from what you said, Sara, and what you said as well, Luca, both teams are out of form. They're not in their best shape. They're not looking good at the moment. So it will be a lot more of a slugfest than we're expecting two glamorous teams, because obviously we don't have... the greatest manager in Napoli's history at the helm anymore. Spalletti's no longer there. It's Mazzarri.
Speak about history, I don't say the greatest match, but in history, Mazzarri has been great for Napoli. But in 2024, you need something different. Of course, it was a good option in the stage of the season. They appointed him because he already knew the fans. He already knew the team. He was following Napoli also, you know, not supporting, but he has been part of Napoli's history in coming back to the top level. Good trainer, of course, good manager, but you need something different in 2024. It's absolutely a counter-attack football, but as Sara said, and as you also said, Hans, against Barcelona is something that may work.
It may work, especially on that big pitch in Napoli as well. That would be a good game to be watching as well. I'd love to see our reaction to it. I'm pretty sure we won't be recording that day, Sara, for obvious reasons, but
I won't be staying still if we were recording.
Nah, that's true. It's all okay. It's all good. Because we're speaking about Napoli, we've spoken quite a lot about Napoli. I need to ask Luca, whilst he's here as well, what's happening in the Serie A title race as well? Because we spoke about Inter Milan versus Juventus, and it was a very dull 1-0 win for Inter Milan a couple weeks ago as well. Have there been any big changes in development? Because there is a 7-point gap. I'm dying.
Drink, bro, drink. What a time.
Okay.
I thought Musiala was going to score and I just lost it. I lost it in full flight.
Oh, no.
I'm keeping this in the record. This is hilarious. This is absolutely hilarious as well. I lost my voice. I thought Musiala just did something incredible. But he didn't. Oh, sorry. Take two.
We are back.
We are back. Inter Milan, Juventus, 7-point gap at the moment. Inter Milan with a game in hand. Luca, what can you tell us and our audience about the Serie A title race? Is it becoming a one-horse race now, or Juventus still got time to catch up Inter Milan?
Pretty difficult to catch up now because also Juventus lost against Udinese. It was important, very important for them to win. It was very important for them to win because they would have stayed not on the same level at Inter, but, you know, still in the race. Now I feel that Inter just have to be quiet and, you know, if they keep going as they are, they're going to win it. Because this year, Inter, I feel, they are a perfectly balanced team with a strong identity. Praise be to the manager, Simone Inzaghi, because he's doing great. And nobody ever speaks about him. We always hear everybody speaking. Yeah, you are an exceptional podcaster and also you understand football. But
thank you.
Very few people speak about Simone Inzaghi.
Let's hear it from you. How well has he done this season?
Some TV programs that are speaking about Simone Inzaghi.
They're not even saying Inter Milan will be a favorite again for the Champions League. They just think Atletico Madrid will roll over Inter Milan. What's your thoughts on that, Luca?
I feel that Inter Milan have this strong identity. I feel they can play. They can defend together. They can attack together. They have Thuram that has been amazing because he's fun.
We also discussed it
on the previous podcast I was in here. He's a perfect combination with Lautaro. Lautaro is the main scorer. You pass to Lautaro, he scores. He is balanced. Thuram, he's fast. He can break through the lines. Also, the around team is perfect with Çalhanoğlu now being one of the best midfielders in the world at this stage of his career. Mm. You have seen, of course, the viral clip of the pass against Juventus in the San Siro. That's like
Sara every time she plays football. She's got that range on her when she passes.
Crazy.
They have Barella, they have Mkhitaryan, who is intelligent. They have Di Marco on the left. They can bring Dumfries on the right. In the defense, they are...
Matteo Darmian has been doing really well recently as well, right wing back.
Yeah. So they are a perfectly balanced team. And I feel they can go pretty much further also in the Champions League. And I hope, because an Italian team, we need some Italian teams to go further. And as Napoli are playing Barcelona and Lazio are playing Bayern Munich, not the best draws for the Italians, I would say.
Lazio are doing really well. Like, literally, when I lost my voice, I thought Musiala was going to do something, but he didn't. I'm just like, this is why we can't do live reactions, sorry. I'm just going to lose my voice when I'm watching football. It's absolutely crazy.
I have a question, really quickly, just on Italian teams in the Champions League. Because last year, obviously, we saw Milan in the semifinals and Inter in the final. But a lot of the takeaway, I don't know, Hams, if you can back this as well, but in Canada and a lot of people, I know that, let's say maybe follow the Premier League a little bit more, La Liga especially. Even though there were two Italian teams present, there was no kind of, I want to say, respect for the Serie A because of the type of football they play. It's boring, right? It's slow. It's very defensive. So even though there were two Italian teams after so long finally making the semis, finally making the final, people were like, they didn't really deserve to be there. I kind of wanted to know how you feel about that. Being Italian, obviously, and you're working so closely with the Serie A.
I'll start with my point of view and then Luca will finish.
Go for it.
It's okay. But my point of view is 10 years ago, the Serie A was nowhere, in my opinion, from a normal point of view.
It was everywhere.
It was nowhere because it was Juventus, 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 Juventus. You saw the banter era of Inter Milan. You saw the banter era of Roma. You saw the banter era of Inter Milan as well. You saw all of these ridiculous charges against these clubs. They couldn't buy a league title because Juventus was so dominant. It was a farmers league. It was a definition of a farmers league. And I think from 2014 to 2024, like even as we normally do, sorry, when you do our all-time drafts, if we were to do a Serie A draft, no one really come out of Juventus. Besides Juventus, no one would really come from 2012 to 2016, in my opinion, because there were just no one else there. So from my point of view, Italian football has lost a lot of its quality, but it's regained a lot from being quite a bad league, in my opinion, a really badly run league, in my opinion, as well. Again, from an outside perspective, but still a fan of Serie A football as well. And that's why I think when you saw them in the Champions League last season, everyone's like, oh, AC Milan, Inter Milan, it's great to see them back, but are they really going to challenge Man City and Real Madrid? Not really. That's fair enough, but they've still got a long way to go in terms of being a better quality or an elite team as well. That's why I'm quite gassed about Simone Inzaghi bringing it up again, because you've got challenges in Napoli, you had challenges in AC Milan, and the last 3 or 4 years, Luca, remind me, four different winners in Scudetto, Inter, Napoli, AC Milan, four different winners, right? Yeah.
That's just
my point of view.
Juventus, Inter, Milan, Napoli. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's correct, absolutely. Italian football is growing, but we are starting now and from the bottom, from the real bottom. You know, I was today at my match on the other pitch. There were some like 10 years olds, and they are finally playing from the back, from the keeper, with, you know, starting to play modern football.
Yeah. Not like Andre Onana, more like Ter Stegen, more like Courtois.
You know, playing football, just playing football from the back, starting on the lines, etc. Because here in Italy, we tend to do the catenaccio, you know, the world famous catenaccio. So everybody in defense, then a long pass, and we run, we go, etc.
And it's heritage.
Pretty much also as Italy won the Euros 3 years ago.
Wait, sorry, what did they win? One more time? Just for hands.
The Euros.
It was a good tournament. I enjoyed it.
No, I
went to the Italy versus Spain game at Wembley, so I was cheering when Chiesa.
Oh yeah, that's how
great Italy goal. Won at the
great
national.
Goal.
Completely.
Yes.
Poor Saka. Poor Saka. He can still feel that shirt neck being pulled as well by Chiellini as well. Poor Bukayo Saka.
But now Italian football is evolving. There is a new generation of managers coming. I feel in England or elsewhere, they are not speaking a lot about it, but we have new coaches finally that are importing ideas from foreign football, like Palladino in Monza, Thiago Motta in Bologna, because of course he's an international one. He played in Barcelona, he played in PSG, also in Inter.
Jeez, you're on fire today, Luca. We're talking about Bologna later as well, but we have to talk about Daniele De Rossi as well at Roma.
He's Daniele De Rossi, of course, Juric in Torino, Gilardino, former striker for Italy, also in the 2006 World Cup, now
and
in
AC
Genoa.
Milan.
Also AC Milan. He's coaching Genoa. New generation of managers coming. Finally, some modern football, and also Simone Inzaghi, of course, doing his amazing job.
Half time.
Yeah, no, I really hope it does get better and it is changing, and it makes me happy hearing you saying that they're kind of adjusting to play modern football, because growing up, I think for all of us, like, the Serie A was something different with, you know, Milan and Inter, especially with the players that went through those teams. Like, that was football heritage times. Like, truly, like, the Serie A was tough in the early 2000s. And then all of a sudden it went to one of the worst leagues. Like, it was horrible.
No,
it got rid of corruption, which is the best thing for the league, in my opinion, as well. We had so much corruption going on with the owners, with the relegations, with the match fixing, the points deductions and everything as well. So it's the fact that we're getting to see them rebuild it from the ground up, like Lucas said as well. Their football is evolving, their coaches are a lot better than they used to be as well. And it's like we said before off camera as well, sorry, we want to learn more about these smaller teams across Europe, because we want to learn more about what makes them so special and so unique. And we will be getting onto Lazio and Bologna later on in one of our match day previews, and that's where Luca gets a shine talking to us about Thiago Motta as well. So we will be seeing a lot more from Italian football over the next 3-4 years as well. Annoyingly, their Italian national team, I hope no one takes offense to this, they are quite bipolar, aren't they, Luca? Sometimes the best team in Europe and sometimes not very good at qualifying for tournaments as well. So the big change of developments for their national team as well. But it's going to be fun to see how they grow and they develop going forward as well. And their football kits are always really cool to purchase as well, which is great. So going on to our next topic, we're only going to talk about the Champions League games from yesterday as well. Man City winning 3-1 against Copenhagen. Sarah really predicted it correctly, I believe, as well on her show. So she knows football. She knows Danish football. She knew that Copenhagen were going to score at home as well, which is great to see. And Real Madrid beating RB Leipzig 1-0. Brahim Diaz with a Lionel Messi-esque goal in terms of the way he turned away from the defenders. He shot into the far corner. Fantastic finish to that game as well. My question to both of you going forward, it's going to be a one-word answer. Who is the favourite out of these two teams, Real Madrid and Manchester City? Luca, go first, and then Sarah. Who's the favourite to win the Champions League this season?
To me, winning the Champions League, it's always one team and one name, and it's the shirt you're wearing.
Ooh, Barcelona. I'm joking, it's me.
Don't make me cry.
Champions League equals Real Madrid.
15 it would be, or 14 it would be in total, which is incredible. And the fact they played with so many injuries yesterday as well. Tchouameni at centre-back, you had no Jude Bellingham as well. Modric was on the bench and not really appearing until later in the game as well. It's crazy to think about how Real Madrid will continue to build. And Carlo Ancelotti continues to profile players so well. He did it at AC Milan when he profiled Kaká as a number 10 in such a fine position. Bellingham doesn't have to play anywhere else for his career as well. He is that guy now. He is that number 10. I know he's injured. He's going to be out for 2-3 weeks, I think, as well. So it's great to see. Sarah, do you agree or disagree? Who do you think is more of a favourite in the Champions League? Real Madrid or Manchester City?
History, come on. Yeah, I agree with Luca. It has to be Real Madrid for me. Just because they've done it so many times before, especially with Ancelotti as well at the realm. This is super important. This guy is such a strategic manager. He knows exactly how to play this team. He works with the injuries. He's able to shift players. Like you mentioned, Tchouameni playing in defence is crazy, but he is the guy that can do it. So I think you have to go with that. My concern with Manchester City is, I don't think I actually have too many concerns, to be honest. And also with Pep Guardiola as well. I mean, one of the, maybe the best manager ever, actually. But
bold claim.
I think so.
You would.
I mean, if you're doing it in all the leagues, like who's winning trebles at different clubs, please?
Ancelotti's doing it. And Jose Mourinho won quite a lot of trophies as well. Oh, that's another
back 6 times though. Like he
Jose Mourinho's prime was when he was younger, as opposed to when he was older. So again, yeah. that Porto season, those 2 seasons for Porto, Europa League for Porto against Celtic, then Champions League against Monaco, against some of the greatest teams ever in 2004 as well. That was a crazy feat. For Jose Mourinho, for Porto as well. But that's another topic. That's another good podcast for another day as well. Who's the greatest manager of all time? That would be a fun conversation. But yeah, carry on with what you were saying. Sorry.
No, it's I basically was just agreeing with Luca. It has to be Real Madrid. This is their tournament for sure. They have a nice little cushion right now in La Liga as well, ahead of Girona, with everyone dropping points this past weekend. So that's going to work in their favor. They're no longer in the Copa del Rey. So that means their focus can go here. The stars are just kind of aligning for Madrid, in my opinion. But that being said, Jude Bellingham is injured. And now Brahim Diaz has picked up an injury after this match. Sure. So attacking-wise, they're... leave him alone. They're picking up some hits for sure, and it'll affect them. But I think Ancelotti will keep making these strategic moves in order to get the best out of the players that he has. And it's been working so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Great analysis there on Real Madrid, and especially how they dominated Girona 4-0 at home as well. It was very funny to see Couto with his pink hair crying in the Santiago Bernabeu. That was a crazy statement. He's just there with his pink hair looking like a Twitch streamer, and is just getting confined by Vinicius Jr. Like, that's a crazy
thing. Don't talk about Couto. He likes our stuff. He watches our stuff.
That's why it's crazy, because for anyone who doesn't know, but basically, we have a few footballer fans on our podcast as well, and Couto is one of them as well. He saw Sarah's video, the preview, really? About Girona. Yeah, he did.
Really?
And I'm just there like, come on, I want you to do something now. I'm like, Girona, you have to do something. And then he's got...
No, who was it? There was a Girona player.
Yes, Savio as well.
No, Arnau voted. I put up on my story the video, and then you know how you can put a poll, Luca?
Yeah. So
who's going to win, you know, Girona or Madrid? Arnau voted Girona. And I said, okay, we got a player voting. It's going to be perfect.
This shirt was out the window on that day. I was trying to find a Girona shirt in England somewhere. They weren't selling them in our local stores. So I was like, I've got to support Girona now. It's supporting our platforms, which is great. But nah, Girona will still make top four for me, in my opinion. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it, because they play some fantastic football. Very enjoyable to watch as well. A breath of fresh air, if I may say so, in La Liga as well. What isn't a breath of fresh air? Luca, you know the deal with our podcast. What's the topic that we always like to have on a conversation? It's a start bench sell, isn't it, Luca? So
indeed, and it's when I suffer.
Are you ready for another one?
Do you want the fresh news? It's not something big. It's just for the meme, you know?
Go for it.
This team, I spoke now to the director, they are sacking the manager right now.
Breaking news. Here we go. That's crazy. Oh, yeah. No. Oh, that's crazy to see.
What is going on. What is the team, Luca?
Sorry?
What's the name of the team? You said it was from the Serie C?
Yeah, Pergolettese. It's in the A group. A group of Serie C. Small team. They are my friends. Close to Milano. Yeah, local team. Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
The manager, because they're losing all the matches.
That's
I pretty much support for them, to be honest.
17.
Ah, we have to have a team.
17.
If I had to support one.
Are they 17? They lost on the weekend. So last week it was Heidenheim with Leon, our German reporter. And then now, yeah, perfect. Pergolettese.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think it's pretty a much. Harder G, no? Perge.
Yeah, indeed. You need, yeah.
Pergolettese.
Correct.
Don't worry. I've got an elite Italian vocal coach. So I'm looking forward to this one as well. That's
Do
bad
we go
news.
With the game?
No, I was more interested in this. I'm like, you get all these informations every part of your day as well. And especially because you're still studying. It's crazy to see that you're ridiculously busy. You're like all of us. We're just ridiculously busy in the football media industry as well. But yes, back again. It's still halftime in the Lazio Bayern Munich game. Back again. Start, bench, sell. Champions League edition 2024. We are going with... Originally, I was going to go for left-backs. I was going to do Alphonso Davies, Federico Di Marco, and Theo Hernandez. But I was like, no way. We've got to have a bit more excitement to this one this season as well. So we are not going to do centre-backs. We're doing centre midfielders. And we've got one from each league. So I wanted to see and hear your point of view as well. So Premier League start, bench, sell, Martin Odegaard, Nicolò Barella, Jamal Musiala, all attacking maestros in their respective leagues. All going to be in the... What happened?
Luca's in pain, really? Sorry.
Nah, it's impossible to play your games. I'm not coming again on the podcast.
All I'm saying is you have a good explanation for a lot of these start bench cells, and I'm just there like, yeah, I'll just clip this bit from Luca because it means that I don't get...
Yeah, you always clip a start bench cell, and then I don't have a point because as soon as you post it, like 2 months after I said the thing, the whole situation has twisted, and the player I started is now bad. You know.
No, it's still is this.
We play. But sorry, because I cannot read.
I posted Victor Osimhen at start, and it was when he was at AFCON, and it was when Lautaro Martinez was killing it, a goal a game. And I'm
exactly.
like, I was hoping.
And I thought, great Hams.
I was hoping to get a lot more traction, and then the comments just killed it. And I'm like, oh my days. Oh, by the way, for this one. Just to make it clear, this will be the first clip I post from this week. So I will give it to my editor to edit it. I will do it personally and I will get it done within the next 7 days of recording. That's a deal that you can be sure about because I always keep my word as well. So final time. Start, bench, sell, Jamal Musiala, Nicolò Barella, and Martin Odegaard. Sarah, go ahead. Where are we going with this one?
We're starting Martin Odegaard. And we're doing that.
Why?
No problem. Don't worry. I'll explain.
Oh, gosh. No.
Yeah, we are. Because, okay, I'm going to tell you from the beginning. Starting Martin Odegaard, benching Musiala. I'm so sorry, Nico Barella, but I have to get rid of some. I have to. I'm in a bad position.
Jeez.
The reason why I'm taking Odegaard over Musiala is because when Odegaard has a good game with Arsenal, he changes the entire team. This is a player that has the ability to do so. Now, Musiala has... way better, maybe technique, has a better shot on goal for sure. But if you have the ability to change an entire team based on the way you're playing, he's the most important player on Arsenal. And you've seen that.
I disagree with that one.
Personally. That's okay. That's fine. You will have your chance to speak. But
it's all about Ben White for me. Ben White's their best player.
Out of here.
Benny Blanco, right back. That's why we have to do start bench sales for right backs. But no, carry on with what you're saying.
No, but I just think he has this influence and this ability that the other two don't. And it's not a bad thing. Why do you think he's the captain? There's certain things that he brings to the table, but it's I'm looking at the bigger picture here versus not just the footballing skill and technique, I guess. So that's mine. What are you going to do?
I like it. But why are you selling Barella and why is Musiala being on the bench as well? Because Musiala, for me personally, we've said it over this season as well, sorry, that personally... Florian Wirtz can play in that Bayern Munich team and he would be just as good as Jamal Musiala, but Jamal Musiala wouldn't be as good as Florian Wirtz in that Bayern Leverkusen team as well. So again, that's a topic for another day as well. But why Musiala bench and why you selling Barella? What's the differentiation there?
I just think if we're looking at skill level, Musiala is a top baller. I just think he has some magic to him that I just enjoy more personally. I think Nico Barella is amazing. He's very like efficient as a footballer, but to me, like Musiala has, and I have, like, for lack of better words, has a sauce. Mm. Like, he has that in him. And I also think we're at a point where he's still growing into the footballer that he could potentially become. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit to Nico Barella, but also we have to get rid of somebody. What am I going to do here?
It's true. That's why Luca lost his cool for the first time ever on this podcast as well. So the fact that we gave him three very good players, because I was going to pick Bellingham, Pedri, Musiala, but I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that because that's quite easy in my opinion as well. So I thought, you know what, let's spice it up a little bit. Luca, start bench though, Nicolò Barella, Martin Odegaard, Jamal Musiala. Where are you going, my friend?
So you killed me with this one, first of all, because they are different players.
They're very different players. Barella's being a lot more reserved now as well, different system.
Because Barella does not play as close to the goal as the other two, especially Musiala. And he's not such a technical player as they are. He has amazing volleys. He's incredible in recovering the ball, making the action start, and also finishing the action with a goal. Because he can go through the lines. He has timing. He has a great shooting. One of the best in shooting in the Serie A, in my opinion,
from a long range point of view.
In Europe, probably, yeah.
He's top five in Europe.
But I would still sell him.
Ooh.
Personally.
Thank you.
That's crazy.
It's coming so hard for me, and we have our Italian journalist here.
No, it's really tough because I love Barella. But your games are tough. That's the point. We should still sell him also if you have to watch on a footballing perspective. He's the oldest of the three.
On this kind of perspective.
Hence, I would also play, and that's the toughest one, but I love, okay? You will kill me, Hans. I love Musiala, okay? I love him.
Not going to kill you. I'm not going to kill you. If you watch football, you would love Jamal Musiala. If you're watching Jamal Musiala ball out,
but also
kind of like I'm doing now at the moment.
As a director, you know, as if I was a director, you know, I would think, the guy is 21. How is he 21, I think? How old is he? Odegaard, he's experienced. He's captaining the Premier League side. Barella is the oldest of the three. He's an amazing footballer. I love him.
Musiala is still 20 years old. 20.
Crazy.
No, it's crazy. He has to play. He has to play and he has to become one of the best in the world.
Nah, that's fair enough. I'm looking forward to seeing Jamal Musiala's rise as well. And the fact that for me, he's at the perfect club at Bayern Munich goes to show that he really can be in the perfect system. He can be the perfect system player. But in a way, Harry Kane is doing a lot of work for him this season, which is great to see because he never had that focal striking partner up front like he did last season. It was always rotated through Choupo-Moting and Sadio Mane and Thomas Müller, I think, played as a number nine sometimes last season as well. My start bench, though, I would start Jamal Musiala. I mean,
shock, the German player.
How is that a shock? Go on, describe to me how that's a shock.
No, it's not a shock. I was being facetious because you love the Bundesliga.
Nah, I love Jamal Musiala. He could have been playing for England, you know, Sara, as well. Once upon a time, he was in the England youth setup and he could have been actually playing with Jude Bellingham. But the fact that I'm not going to compare him to Jude Bellingham as of yet, I wanted to give him his own flowers, not just because I'm watching him ball out against Lazio at the Stadio Olimpico. I think he's an absolutely fantastic player to watch. One of the top five dribblers in the world at the moment for Jamal Musiala. The success rate he has is on par with like prime Neymar back in the Barcelona days, which is great. He passes the eye test when you're watching Jamal Musiala, one of the great players in the Bundesliga, top five in my opinion, in terms of creativity that I would see from the Bundesliga. I would sell Martin Odegaard and I would bench Nicolò Barella because Martin Odegaard this season has been playing a lot deeper than he previously did due to Kai Havertz and Leandro Trossard playing as false nines. So he is a bit more playing out of his comfort zone in a way, I would say, but he's doing quite well out of his comfort zone. But I think Nicolò Barella is an all-action midfielder that we must see in the Premier League. He would be a perfect player to play under Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, but Jurgen Klopp's leaving Liverpool. So I think he would have been fantastic to watch in the Premier League personally, but he's been a shining light for Inter Milan over the last couple of years ago. Again, like Sara mentioned as well, Italy did beat England in the European Championships in 2021, and he was fantastic in that European Championship tournament as well. But again, last season in the Champions League, fantastic partnership as a trio with Mkhitaryan and Calhanoglu as well, forcing Brozovic out of the team for Inter Milan to go off to Saudi Arabia. So my start bench now is starting Jamal Musiala, benching Nicolò Barella, and I will sell Martin Odegaard. So three different ones on that one. And I think, Sarah, to be fair, that's what we like to see on this podcast. We don't want to have boring ones of Saka, Foden, Rodrigo. Who are you going to pick? Oh, I'm going to pick this one.
If you clip this too, I'm sure we're all going to get destroyed by whoever for, you know, all
well, mostly Arsenal fans. I had an Arsenal fan today, Lucas, saying Thomas Partey is better than Rodri. And I'm just like,
oh, dear.
I'm like, why? I'm just like, this is not happening to me, and I'm not going to allow myself to get annoyed at this. So sometimes football fans have their right opinions, and sometimes they just don't know what they're talking about because they're biased. Bonus of the show, we are going on to Scout Hams. We are going on to my bit for today, and it's going to involve Luca as well because we are talking about a young player playing for Lazio. I am all about Bayern Munich and Lazio today. Jeez, we are on it today. My energy is here today as well because we've got Gustav Isaacson, whose energy has been killing it for Lazio. Luca will tell us all about it from his perspective, but from me, a goal and assist this season in Serie A. He was fantastic on the weekend. I think they're playing against Cagliari. I don't know if I pronounce it properly. Cagliari. In a 3-1 win. Cagliari.
No, don't say the G. You can't
the
say
G's
the G.
Not there.
It's silent G.
Cagliari.
Pretty much.
Cagliari. This is going to be clips as well.
So take the G. And make a year.
Yeah. Cagliari.
That was that one. Yeah, that was good.
Pretty much, yeah.
Stick with that. I'll clip that bit and that will be my authentic Italian as well. But he was fantastic on the weekend. You've got Felipe Anderson, who's playing pretty well for Lazio, but I think he's going to be another young Danish wonder kid who's coming through in Serie A, who will be breaking down barriers again for Scandinavian football. He's been very good to watch this season. He's been in and out of the side. But Luca, have you been watching most of Gustav Isaacson from Lazio? And what have you really seen from him that's impressed you in his game so far?
So first of all, it's not easy for a Danish player to break into the Serie A.
Rasmus Højlund.
But he's a different player. Because
different caliber.
Isaacson is a winger. Højlund is a striker. Højlund is a powerful player. Isaacson is a technical player. Mm. Generally speaking, technical players that are not powerful physically tend to suffer in the Serie A, okay? But Isaacson has something about the magic of how he plays, and also the, I'm missing the English word, sorry. But, you know, he's always performing good as soon as he enters a good period, and now he's entering
purple patch, yeah, confidence.
Yeah, confidence too. Because now he's starting to play regularly. He played 3 45-minute matches, and now the last three matches were as a starter. He played more than 80 in two of them. He scored two goals and also one goal and also had two assists in the Serie A. He has played also in the Champions League. He disposed one assist also in the Champions League. So he's definitely one to watch. I wouldn't feel that for Isaksen it's possible to sell him for the same amount of fees that we were speaking about. Højlund is a central striker, center forward, is a different player. But Isaksen is a player that could perform very well in Serie A, and especially in the system of Maurizio Sarri at Lazio, because I feel it's a very good environment for him. Also, always for wingers, it's good to be coached by Sarri. Also in Napoli, his wingers were shining. And now in Lazio, they're doing solidly, as you also said about Felipe Anderson and all the other guys he has. Playing with Ciro Immobile as a striker is always easy in the Serie A for a winger because you can provide many assists to him. He's one of the best strikers in Serie A history. So it's generally speaking good. And he's performing well. I'm curious to see how he will go in the big match, you know, against the top sides in the Serie A.
Against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, of course. But Bayern Munich are closer to a Danish side, you know, as physical style of play. Of course, it's
big stamina as well, Bayern Munich.
But, you know, the physicality of the game. In the Serie A, it's and also the dynamism, you know, palm, right, left, front, forward, and then back. In the Serie A, it's different. It's tougher for wingers. And I'm curious to see him, like, against an AC Milan, against the Juve, against Inter, that kind of teams, you know?
Absolutely. Sarah, there was a topic that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago in terms of the different types of dynamics of a striker as well. And I think it would be good to get Luca's opinion on this one for strikers in the modern day as well. So Luca, we were speaking recently about how no two strikers are now the same type of profile of striker anymore. So in terms of Rasmus Højlund being different to Lautaro Martinez and Marcus Thuram being different to Robert Lewandowski, have you noticed that in the Serie A as well, in terms of how certain types of strikers like Ciro Immobile, who we'll get onto later on as well, because he broke history this week as well. Do you think there's a lot more benefit to that, having an old school striker like Immobile working against someone like a Vlahovic as well in Serie A?
It's different, and it depends on the system of the coach, first of all. Because a perfect player, unless we are speaking about Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, aliens, does not exist.
Anthony Martial, always got to mention.
A player can be perfect for a certain system. That's why I see Ciro Immobile good in Lazio, almost perfect, because he scored 200 goals. He's an amazing player throughout his Serie A career. So, of course, I see Olivier Giroud perfectly in AC Milan. We see that the partnership between Thuram and Lautaro is amazing at Inter. We see that the partnership between Kvara and Osimhen is great at Napoli. But why? Because Napoli go in the counter-attack and they are perfect together. Why? Because Inter goes in a certain way and they are perfect together. Why Giroud? Because he's clutch player, and AC Milan need the clutch player in certain ways, in certain times, like against Napoli last year. He missed the penalty, then he scored the goal. So he's always focused, he's always mental. Every player is perfect for a system. But in the Serie A, there is this general rule that if you want to avoid relegation, you should get an experienced Serie A striker, you know? So physical striker that knows how to score. He can be both young or old, does not matter. But he has, as long as he has experience in the Serie A, he knows how it works. He knows how the defenders are, so tough defenders. He generally is a tough striker. He scores that maybe 5 to 6 to 7 goals in a season. And you try to avoid relegation alongside him. And that's the general rule in Serie A. So that's why you see many similar strikers in the lower teams. But in the upper teams, every striker is thought to be perfect in that kind of system.
Greatly put as well, because it's like that with the Premier League as well. We spoke about how Erling Haaland is basically a robot. He is a superhuman athlete in terms of what you're looking at. But then there's no one really near his quality in terms of athletic performance. You don't see that athleticism from Alexander Isak or Darwin Nunez or anyone of that same kind of build as well. And Sarah, we were speaking previously about Antoine Griezmann, about how he used to be a winger and now is playing as a central striker for Atletico Madrid, and Alvaro Morata, who's recently been injured for Atletico Madrid, how he's a similar, well, he's not so similar, I would say, but he's to use a better example, he's a lot dissimilar to someone like a Joselu or someone different to a Borja Iglesias as well, who's gone on loan to Bayern Leverkusen as well. So that was a thought process as well, that strikers are a lot more different now as opposed to being the profile of striker they used to be, following more the manager system and what the system requires as a number nine striker as well, because there's not much I can say really in terms of what a number nine striker is, because you can't really sum it up like you used to 5-10 years ago, I would say, going forward. So any thoughts on that, Sarah? Whilst I get some water, BRB.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to see how, here we go. And actually, what's more important is that Kylian Mbappe has scored a goal. Finally a goal. 0-0, 57th minute. And then Kylian Mbappe scores at the Parc des Princes, naturally. But I will say, this game, Real Sociedad have been fighting, and I don't know. I wouldn't feel confident just yet if I was Paris, because playing at the Anoeta in Basque country in Spain is very difficult because of the high altitude. Oh, he tapped it in. Is he offside?
Ooh, VAR check.
Sorry, this is my focus now. I think he's okay. Is it nil in the other game?
It's still no. Wow. You'll see my face reacting to random Musiala things as well as my voice went earlier. So that's going to be a memeable clip later down the line as well.
Well, let's see how she goes. That's it. All right, 1-0 PSG. That's all I have to say about strikers.
Perfect. It's like Mbappe timed it perfectly as well, which is great to see. Right, on to the next topic. So this is where we get to focus on a Premier League player. And for this one, it was going to be a start bench sell, but I thought we'll just talk about Declan Rice, because Declan Rice is a powerhouse at the moment for Arsenal. He scored recently against West Ham away in 6-0 victory at the Olympic Stadium as well, which is great to see.
He hammered them.
Declan Rice hammered West Ham, and he hammered David Moyes. Sarah is losing her mind at that. It's a proper dad joke.
So embarrassing.
It's a proper dad joke that you had there, which is crazy. But Declan Rice hammered that goal against Arsenal, which is great to see. There are a lot of people now saying how Declan Rice is considered one of the best centre defensive midfielders in the world. Arsenal fans are saying he is the best centre defensive midfielder in the world. But for me personally, I wanted to know from both your perspective, Luca, and your Sarah, do you see Declan Rice as being the out-and-out best defensive midfielder in the world when you've got Rodri, you've got Kimmich, you've got Tchouameni, you've got quite a lot of good defensive midfielders across European football right now? Is he out-and-out for you, Luca? And is he out-and-out the best defensive midfielder in the world for you, Sara? So, Luca, we'll start with you. What do you think about Declan Rice?
It's always difficult to speak about absolutes, the best, because, as I said, a player is perfect in a system. I feel for Arsenal, he's a perfect player, because he can carry the ball, he's a perfect box-to-box, he's modern, he has vision, he can score goals. So yeah, great player. He would have been also great at Man City. He's one of the most versatile, to be honest, center defensive midfielders in the world, because he's probably also the most offensive one. If you speak about Tchouameni, that has been adapted as a center back, Rodri, that can also play there. He has played there some matches in his career, and he's a very dynamic player. I love him personally because he's physical, he's imponent, he's powerful, so great player. And those are the players that you dream of seeing in the Serie A, but it's impossible, you know. So it's something that we cannot afford. We can afford to...
You've got Ruben Loftus-Cheek. You've got Ruben Loftus-Cheek, so it's not too bad. You've still got a couple of great players.
Absolutely. I love watching him.
Nah, it's good with Declan Rice because before we got into Sarah's point of view as well, like a lot of people are saying that he's following the roots of Yaya Toure as well, because he's now becoming a box-to-box centre midfielder who did play at centre-back once upon a time in his career. And he's now looking like he's dominating midfield every single game, which is crazy to think about. But Sarah, being a Spanish fan as well, would you say Rodri is still a class above Declan Rice, or would you say Declan Rice is looking to basically just pip him in terms of being the out-and-out best defensive midfielder in the world?
Yeah, I think it has to be Rodri still. Come on, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But I agree with you in the sense of Declan Rice being such a good fit for Arsenal. So I think that's really playing into getting the best out of him as well, right? Like, they go hand in hand. So I think it's been an excellent fit. Let's see how it keeps going down the road, though. I also think we're so quick to jump on players, you know, right away and say, okay, like, is this the best? Are they the best now? Like, he's still warming up with Arsenal, which is kind of scary because he's playing brilliantly, but it's his first season there, right? So let that kind of marinate for a bit. Let's see how that keeps going. But for me, Rodri is different. Like, he's so similar to me that, like, what Sergio Busquets was. And to me, this is like a level above that. Like, these kind of like Rodri, Busi, compared to a player like Declan Rice, like, when you have the ability to what seems like slow down a game by stopping the clock with the way you play, like, Rodri emulates that, right? So I think that's just, it's special. It's not very common. And that's what makes these guys kind of a little bit above all the rest, in my opinion.
Would you say Rodri's world class?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Absolutely.
Yeah. Why wouldn't he be?
That's fine, because a lot of people are saying Declan Rice is world-class. I'm thinking, with a lot of people in England, from my point of view, like, literally, he's been doing this since 2018, 2019 for West Ham United. So he's been absolutely phenomenal for West Ham, and a team that hasn't been shining for a good number of years until last season when they won the Europa Conference League and he finally got his time in the sun. He was fantastic for England at the World Cup. He was amazing at the European Championship. So from an English point of view, he's been fantastic for 5-6 years now. But because he's at Arsenal, he's now getting that European and that worldwide recognition a lot because he's at the bigger clubs, respectively. You're seeing him play week in, week out in the bigger games, which is great to see from a point of view from Declan Rice. But everyone's still thinking, yeah, it's not so much world class yet. But I think this season in the Champions League, they've got a tough tie against Porto, which they may struggle against, in my opinion, as well. But we will see him becoming a better player as this title race goes on in England, which will be a great conversation to be having out further down the season as well. But thank you very much for your input on Declan Rice, and thank you, Gurinder, for suggesting it, our very favorite social media graphic designer, which is great. Match day preview, we've got three previews to go for. We are going to save the Premier League one till last. We're going to start with the Bundesliga one, and then we've got the Serie A one in the middle, where Luca gets to talk about Lazio, Thiago Motta, Bologna, all of that jazz. So I'm going to start us off with Wolfsburg versus Borussia Dortmund this weekend in the Bundesliga, because it is
looking... We're not doing Heidenheim and Bayer Leverkusen.
All I'm saying is we may have to start a Heidenheim podcast, and the team that I forgot how to pronounce, let me try and Bergolatese.
Hey.
We have to do a Heidenheim and a Bergolatese every single week now on our podcast.
You want, I can bring the director next time. So ask how it works to run a club directly as a sporting director.
That would be a dream. That would be absolutely fantastic. And
I can call him right now if you want.
It'll join the Zoom pool by all means. It needs to be done as well. Like, you still owe me a conversation with Christian Vieri as well. The fact you once said on the podcast. Luca once said on the podcast, I was speaking to my friend Christian here about a striker for Inter.
No, not like this. I was speaking with Christian Vieri at a certain time. I don't meet him that often, you know, but when it happens, you know.
I don't have
his phone number. Like, I call him, hey, Bobo, how are you? It's not like this.
You need to do it live. If you do it live, that would be crazy. He's probably watching Champions League at the moment, but...
Upamecano, red card for Bayern Munich. Lazio, it's time to shine.
Suki strikes again. I love it. I love this game because we had so many Bayern fans saying Upamecano doesn't make mistakes. And we're saying he makes mistakes in the biggest of moments for France and for Bayern Munich.
He's constantly doing this.
It's crazy. Suki strikes
for France
again.
For
France too, especially at the World Cup. Crazy. Right, I've distracted myself.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Wolfsburg versus Borussia Dortmund. Borussia Dortmund are back in the Champions League next week against PSV Eindhoven. Well, I believe PSV Eindhoven will beat Borussia Dortmund in the first leg. The second leg and the tie, I'm not too sure, but I've got full confidence in this young PSV side. But Wolfsburg are looking pretty decent in the Bundesliga at the moment. Another Danish striker, Jonas Wind, has got 10 goals in all competitions. He is going to be competing for that number 9 spot against Manchester United's Rasmus Højlund for the starting position in the European Championships. But with Borussia Dortmund at the moment, all the talk in England is about Jadon Sancho. But Jadon Sancho doesn't start games for Borussia Dortmund, so he's not really having a good time back in his former club on loan, which is not great for Man United fans because we want to see him shine and develop and really prove the manager wrong. But it's not the case, and maybe Erik ten Hag is being proved right in this state. But again, Niklas Füllkrug has scored 10 goals in the Bundesliga this season, and we had a lot more shine and light on Sebastian Haller going back into Borussia Dortmund as well. So maybe he will be getting some game time ahead of the Champions League after his heroics for the Ivory Coast and the African Cup of Nations. But Julian Brandt, Bino Gittens, they're going to be some players to be watching out for this weekend. I'm expecting a Borussia Dortmund win. But with Wolfsburg, they are looking... What's happened now? Have Lazio scored?
Immobile scored a penalty.
We're getting on to Immobile. You know what? We get on to Immobile straight away because I'm going to say Wolfsburg are going to beat by Borussia Dortmund. We're going on to Lazio versus Bologna, and we are going to be talking about Ciro Immobile. Luca, 200 goals in Serie A for Ciro Immobile, one of the legends of Serie A football. It's been incredible to see how he went abroad and he didn't really work out, but he became one of the best players in Lazio's history. He's become the 8th player to reach this milestone and the 4th player to reach this figure in the last 45 years. Francesco Totti, Roberto Baggio and Antonio Di Natale are the 3 other players in the last 40 years to reach 200 Serie A goals. Talk to me, Luca. Talk to the audience about Ciro Immobile and how he's been such a special talent. As soon as Sara mentioned that penalty, clearly my stream has been lagging from BT Sport today. Go ahead, Luca.
Amazing player because he knows how to score in any way. You know, he had done some championships in which he would score like 30 per year just casually. You know, not playing for the biggest of the teams because Lazio is a huge side. They came second, sometimes third, etc. But you know, he has not been playing for Juventus in the golden era of Juventus, nor for Inter in the years they are shining now, nor for AC Milan. He has been playing for Lazio, so a team that sometimes qualifies for the UCL, sometimes for the Europa League, you know. Good team, of course, but you know, you're not speaking of the big three of Italy. And he has been great consistently, you know, because he knows how to score. He's also a penalty taker and he's deadly for the penalty spot. So, you know, great player.
Fantastic player. Again, like you mentioned, for Italy, he's a mainstay as a number nine striker.
The thing is, here in Italy, we always say he doesn't do that much for Italy. But as we said, a player has his environment and his system, you know?
Yeah. He was fantastic at the Euros as well.
Yeah.
Between, in terms of, let's say, Italian national team perspective, when you have Ciro Immobile and Lorenzo Insigne, because, of course, Lorenzo Insigne plays for my team in Toronto. Yeah. This is not my team.
I was going to say, that's the first time I've heard you use that term before.
I'm just trying to relate it to so he understands.
Your local team. Yeah. I get you.
I should have said that, my local team. Yeah, him and Fede. But from an Italian national team perspective, who do they kind of think is maybe a better striker?
Two different players, because Insigne is a winger, not a proper forward. So, I understood what you meant. But here in Italy, we have the feeling now that Insigne is the past, Immobile is still something part of the team.
Okay, yeah.
But Insigne has been great, and everybody in Italy remembers him well, especially Napoli.
Yeah, of course.
Legend of the club.
Absolutely fantastic as well. But it's looking quite bleak for Bayern Munich at the moment as we're speaking. But I need to stop getting distracted from this game. It's very, very fun. But yeah, Lazio, they are challenging for a European qualification position. But the surprise of the Serie A season, it's not so much the title race or the relegation battle. It's the Champions League spots in Bologna. Luca, this is where you get to shine, because I've been watching a lot of Bologna recently on my lunch breaks at work. And I thought, you know what? They're quite fun to watch when you're looking at them.
They are fun to watch.
They are very
fun
to watch.
That's why they're shining.
Thiago Motta.
And they won tonight also against Fiorentina.
2-0,
wasn't it? 2-0.
Yeah. Crazy.
Fiorentina.
Some of their players, Joshua Zirkzee, Scotsman Lewis Ferguson, Alexis Salamakers, who's on loan from AC Milan as well, has been absolutely fantastic to watch. But for me personally...
They will trigger the buy option, in my opinion. 9 million buy option. He's worth it, to be honest, Salamakers. So...
But for that price as well, in this modern day and age as well, it's crazy to think about.
But in Serie A, you know, that's the market. Unlucky.
It's a good market, though, when you're looking at some of these players, because they just don't need to go abroad. But from one of my favourite players is Jesper Karlsson, and because Salamakers is playing so well, he's keeping Jesper Karlsson out of the side, which is crazy to think about. And Jesper Karlsson has been one of the best young Swedish talents in European football recently, and is not really getting a game because Thiago Motta's team, they play street football. They are exciting to watch. They have so much flexibility, and he's taken influence from Bielsa from Leeds United, and I'm pretty sure it was the other manager. There was another manager he was influenced by. Was it? It will come back to me. But he was influenced by some of the top managers when he was doing his UEFA A thesis as well. And it's crazy to think about how the former Inter Milan and Barcelona defensive midfielder is one of the top coaches in Serie A. Talk to us more about how, again, Joshua Zirkzee, £40 million release clause, Lewis Ferguson bought from Scotland, standing captain. This is a fantastic story in Serie A, would you say, Luca?
Also Riccardo Calafiori on the back. And his story is interesting because he was a left back. He's left-footed. He played for Roma. He was a local player from Roma, the youth teams, etc. And then he went away. He went in a foreign club. He went to Basel in Switzerland to get some minutes, some playing time, because in Italy, nobody really wanted to go for him too much. They were just relegation battle teams. He went to Basel. He did great. Now he came back to the Serie A, and Thiago Motta understood that his future was not as a left back, even if he was good. And also AC Milan wanted him as a Theo Hernandez, backup. In the summer. But Bologna are playing him center back alongside Bekema, and they are a perfect couple because Calafiori is fast, he's physical, he's technical, perfect for Thiago Motta. They play with the inverted fullbacks, sometimes very modern football, very space occupation football, not really caring about whose position is what, you know. A left back can go in the middle, a center back can go attacking. I've seen Bologna live at San Siro. It was very fun to watch 2-2 against AC Milan. So they drew against AC Milan. And the fact that Calafiori followed AC Milan strikers, even in the AC Milan side, you know, I felt like if the AC Milan striker had to go to the bathroom, he would also follow him in the
man marking, literally man marking that time.
Yeah, man marking, because it's a great football to watch. They have great players, and it all starts from the director that we were mentioning, Giovanni Sartori, that always does such an amazing job with his teams at Chievo Verona, at Atalanta, and now in Bologna, and also Thiago Motta's job. Amazing, amazing. I think they're gonna take one European spot. I don't feel the Champions League spot.
That's the question everyone wants to know.
But possibly a Europa League, Conference League maybe spot, because they would also deserve it. And I feel Thiago Motta would deserve to play European competition, and I don't care if it will be with Bologna again next year or with another team.
Here's my bold claim of the week. It's not really an unpopular opinion because I don't think anyone has this opinion. For me personally, seeing the way Bologna are playing, I personally think Thiago Motta should be the next manager of Barcelona. That's my opinion. The fact that Barcelona...
Hot take.
It's a hot take. Because I'm looking at Thiago Motta's way of playing. It's somewhat different to the way Barcelona played under Xavi. But it's so much fun to watch. It would bring that league to life again. And I think Barcelona really have the players. They have the nucleus in that side to be playing such an expansive brand of football. Because we've seen this before in Serie A, where we've seen Roberto De Zerbi leave Sassuolo after playing some fantastic football with some fantastic players to move to Brighton. And he's revolutionized Brighton so much so that he's being touted as the next replacement for Pep Guardiola when he eventually leaves Manchester City. I think Barcelona should go really into Thiago Motta and think, you know what? Thiago Motta needs to be our man for the next manager. Not Hansi Flick, not so much Rafael Marquez, maybe not even Jurgen Klopp in a year's time.
Ralph Rangnick is the one that they've all been talking about.
Yeah, but Ralf Rangnick's sick. He's so sick. Austrian manager, former interim manager at Manchester United. But he's better as a technical director, but not a manager in this day and age as well, in my opinion as well. His talent.
Some Barcelona friends have the feeling that they will appoint Rafa Márquez. So internal solution.
Likely Rafa Márquez, because he is the cheapest option. He knows a lot of the players very well because he's the coach of the
B-team, yeah.
Exactly. So he's familiar with Marquiu, Fermín López, all these guys. He's, you know, so it's the easiest option with the least amount of transition, basically. So I think it will be Rafa Márquez as well. I don't think it's the best idea, but I think this is what they'll do.
If Barcelona don't go for Thiago Motta as their next manager, he will go on to manage someone top in the Serie A. He may go to Inter Milan when Simeone Inzaghi leaves, or he may go to Juventus when Maximiliano Allegri leaves as well. I really think this is Barcelona's time to shine off the pitch in terms of getting one of the best young managers in modern football. We've said it before on this podcast.
Is he ready for such a big team? That's the question.
I would back it personally.
When you
give
go
him all
from
the time
Bologna, he was in Genoa, Spezia, Bologna, Barcelona. It's difficult. You know, it's tough. Mm. He has a very...
But remember Xavi as well.
Modern football. He is perfect for Barcelona style, you know? But you have to understand if he's ready for the step or he has to take an intermediate one, because it's a huge step. In my opinion, he's a fantastic manager. He's one of the best we have in Serie A. And I said in an Italian podcast that Bologna is the team that plays the best football here in Italy because they have a team identity. But can you build the same identity at Barcelona with players such as Lewandowski, Gavi, Pedri, et cetera, and all the players they have?
Andreas Christensen as well.
Yeah, it's not... The thing is... When you speak to guys like...
Sara's laughing like he wasn't the Danish player of the year. What is going on, Sara? Come on. Sara was laughing when I said Andreas Christensen. Is the Danish footballer of the year, and Sara's laughing like I'm making fun of him. Disrespectful to your own centre-back.
The thing is, Hans, that when you have to speak to players like Skorupski in goal, Calafiori, Beukema, we speak Salemaker, Fabian, and all the Xerxe, etc., you can bring them an identity. But when you go into Barcelona dressing room, you speak to Ter Stegen, Koundé, Christensen, and all the guys, Gavi, Pedri, etc. Are they going to listen to you? That's the question. Are they going to adapt to your principles? Because you also have to adapt to their principles. You know, it's Barcelona. It has an identity. But I feel that Thiago can adapt to Barcelona's principle because he knows them, because he played there. He knows Barcelona's principle, and they are similar to his principle. So, yeah. He's perfect fit for Barcelona. Maybe he needs an intermediate step. That's the only thing I would say.
Nah, that's fair enough. It's all good. And now all of our listeners know how much I've been talking about Serie A. Watch Bologna play football. You'll have a good time watching their highlights on the Serie A YouTube channel as well. Or if it comes on live TV, wherever you get your TV subscription from as well, go for it. great topic of conversation. I really enjoyed that one as well. Final match day preview, the biggest game in the Premier League this weekend. Unfortunately, it's not Man United against Luton. Sarah, we're going to Manchester City against Chelsea, two teams that I don't think are going to be much liked and appreciated going forward with their FFP regulation issues going forward. It's very, very difficult to see how they're going to survive. Everton have been deducted points. Nottingham Forest are going to have a trial soon as well. Chelsea are on the brink of having a trial set, and Manchester City's trial is set for 2025 of all years as well. So lots of charges against these two teams, but they are two fantastic teams to watch as of late. Chelsea are getting back into form. Cole Palmer has been absolutely fantastic, and they won emphatically 3-1 away to Crystal Palace on Monday as well. Manchester City won 3-1 away to Copenhagen in the Champions League. So it is the 3-1 game. I'm expecting a 3-1 victory for Manchester City at the Etihad this weekend. But what's your thoughts on this game? And are there any players that you're looking forward to watching for Chelsea or for Manchester City, Sarah?
I mean, I think this is going to be a standard, very... you know,
like every Man City game, just a standard victory.
Just, well, I mean, because Chelsea is so, you don't know what you're going to get from them right now. They have like little bursts of potential, but then all of a sudden everything comes crashing down. Mm-hmm. And there are a few players that have been good throughout the season, but only a very few that have been consistent, right? So I don't know, the Chelsea team, it's so hard to figure out what exactly they're doing, but it still seems quite shambolic. So I will say that I assume Man City will win. It's at the Etihad, I believe, so I think it will be also a thrashing, maybe not a 6-0 thrashing, but I think this is Man City's game. Who am I looking out to watch? Okay, so Phil Foden, I think, has been absolutely brilliant for City, especially becoming a starter once again, kind of coming back into that lineup. He's been great. I like to see him. Of course, I always like to watch Rodri and Kevin De Bruyne in the middle. What are they going to create? What are they going to do? If Julian Alvarez gets on the pitch, gets some minutes, I love to see what he can do. I'd say he maybe scores this weekend against Chelsea.
Good call.
And from Chelsea, I mean, I don't even know who I want to watch at this
point. Petkovic, the goalkeeper, is one of their shining lights of this season so far. And former Manchester City player.
So maybe, but like, I don't even know. I hope Thiago Silva doesn't have a bad game. How about that? That's what I hope, because I love Thiago Silva. I hope that he's not doing what he's been doing.
He did get injured against Crystal Palace, so I'm not sure if he's going to be fit for the game, but there will be a fitness test before to see if he does start. And Thiago Silva versus Erling Haaland will be one of the biggest matchups in the weekend ahead as well. And before we wrap up as well, again, I just need to think about how much Chelsea have spent. I'm going to have a moment silence for how much Chelsea have spent. They've spent four times the value of Serie A clubs in the last 18 months. Do you know how crazy that is, Luca? Four times the amount. Four. And the Serie A clubs have spent in the last 15, 16 years. It's embarrassing to think about.
No, it's also something to study, you know?
It is. It should be.
You have to study this fact, this phenomenon on a market perspective, because it's something, it feels like an impulse from Chelsea needing to sign some 2006 Brazilian wonder kid, you know?
Of course, they understand. Loan him out to Nottingham Forest.
Of course, they understand there is a vision. Of course, they understand there is a project, and it's a very long-term project because they are signing contracts until 2028, 2029, et cetera, 2030. But thing is, you are spending crazy amount of money. So, yeah, here in Italy, we can just watch and enjoy, and maybe report transfers, and hope that some of Chelsea money arrives in Italy, and also. What Italian teams can do, and AC Milan knows how to do it, is taking advantage of the situation to buy some Chelsea outgoings for a lower fee they would be, generally speaking. We are speaking about Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Pulisic. They have been both great for AC Milan. They are shining in the Serie A. Pulisic, very good player. Loftus-Cheek, with his physicality, can bring something very important to the Serie A and to AC Milan, something that was missing after Frank Kessié's departure and also Tonali's departure. So AC Milan was missing a box-to-box player, you know, in the middle. And now they brought Ruben Loftus-Cheek in for a total of 40 million, those two players. And also Olivier Giroud, when he left Chelsea, he went to AC Milan, and AC Milan bought him from Chelsea because he had 1 year more on his contract. And so a Chelsea trio is doing great things in Serie A. So as English side invest money into the Serie A young talents, Serie A can still look at the outgoings of rich Premier League clubs that sometimes they are not looked at too much, but they are good opportunities.
Yeah, like Justin Kluivert, when he left Roma to go to Bournemouth as well, that was a good deal. And he's doing his in and out of the side at the moment, the son of Patrick Kluivert, which is a good conversation to see if he's going to live up to his father's expectation. That was going to be a topic for today's podcast, fathers and sons in football, but we'll stick for another one because that's a very big topic in terms of who were the best father and son duos in football. Before we wrap up the podcast, we've now got a new segment. It's not sponsored by anyone, but it's just very funny. Basically, I've been asked three different questions. We've got three different questions to ask one another. I've asked our audience this week for a question for you, Luca, because I thought, you know what, let's get the audience involved. The best question I've got for you, Sarah's got a question for me and I've got a question for Sarah, but we'll start with you, Luca. It's true. So Luca, we'll start with you first. First of all, Luca, what was your favorite transfer that you've reported on in the last 12 months and why in Serie A?
In Serie A?
In your favorite, in Serie A, yeah.
So in Serie A? In Serie A, okay. Foreign, I would have said Daniel Perez to Bayern Munich or David Raya to Arsenal. But in the Serie A, I'm going to say the January one, because it was the most recent one.
Yeah.
Vitinha from Olympique de Marseille to Genoa, the striker, because Marseille bought him for 30 million or something more with add-ons last January, so January 2023. And they already sold him, it's a loan, with 20, 25 million buy option. And I'm very, related to this news because it was an absolute exclusive. Nobody had even a clue or an idea about this transfer happening. I had a source working closely to the deal on club side, and he had been keeping me posted for a week saying, no, you cannot stay, wait for a moment because it's not the right timing. And then as soon as he called me, yeah, I feel that if your boss can call some people to check the news so they don't understand he was the source, it can be a right timing to put it out. I called the boss confirmed, and we went out with the news. Something amazing is that Marseille president confirmed it in like 2 hour period, because he had 2 hour time because he had a press conference, and he confirmed on the press conference. So it was great news to break, to be honest. Yeah.
Nah, great. Great way of explaining it as well. And Vitinha as well, who has he had a lot of hype built about him when he went to Marseille, and now we've seen him in Genoa. I thought he would have been a better quality to see someone at like a Juventus as a backup player, even Bologna as well, or Lazio as a backup striker. But I think Genoa will get a lot more game time, which will be great for him to regain his confidence as well.
Indeed, and it was also a double deal with also Malinowski's buy option being already triggered in January. So that's why it was also interesting, double deal between Genoa and Marseille, yeah.
Definitely. Any budding journalists out there in the football media who's listening to us, make sure you follow Luca on his social medias for a lot more football content as well. You're always welcome, because you're always competing in our start, bench, sell topics of conversation, which is very, very difficult today as well. One question I've been asked from a fellow member of Friday Night Counterattack to ask Sarah, because I'm sure Sarah's got one for me to ask as well. It's going to be quite cringy for me to say this, but I'm going to say it in the best way possible. Sarah, out of all of the 8 goals that Barcelona conceded against Bayern Munich, which goal was your favorite to watch and why?
I don't think I even watched the last 3. I think I was like walking around the living room at the time.
Punching pillows.
No, I was just like in shock, and I was thinking, and I was, doing the pacing and stuff. And then I remember at one point they scored again. Piqué is looking at the ground like, what's going on? Like it was tragic. Like I couldn't even like tell you. I think the last 3, I was not really properly paying attention.
Philippe Coutinho scored against you whilst he was on loan from Barcelona to Bayern Munich as well. That must have hurt you a lot, man. Because again, £142 million sale.
Yeah, I mean it's not my money, so it's not keeping me up at night. But
your most expensive signing scoring twice against you in the semi final in lockdown, it was crazy.
He also came back to Barcelona and won a Champions League medal when Bayern won it. Coutinho, man, what a guy.
Shameless guy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like any of the goals. This is the worst, defeat Barcelona has ever had in my lifetime. Like, I can't even, it was horrible. But it's interesting because my question to you, and I'm assuming this is from the same person.
It's probably from the same person as well. We're going to stick to asking fans, because the fan question for Luca was a lot better than my question to Sarah. And I'm pretty sure
I'm pretty sure Sarah's question to me will be just as painful to hear.
Well, so let's hear it. It's not as specific, but it says, what's the worst moment you've had as a Man United fan?
Oh, worst moment as a Man United fan.
Barcelona beating you guys in the Champions League.
No, because that was expected. You were a superior team, and I'm not going to lie about that at all. My worst moment as a Man United fan. God, that's hard. Definitely for me, my worst moment as a Man United fan was when I was growing up, seeing Man United lose to Porto in the Champions League in 2004, and seeing Jose Mourinho run down the touchline. That killed young Hams. Young Hams' heart was broken. It was like around, again, February, March time when that happened as well. And I'm just there like, nah, this is not a nice day to be experiencing, because we had a goal that was scored that was wrongly ruled offside. And there was no VAR at the time to sort it out. The camera angles were all showing it. So it was a big misery to see a goal that should have taken us through, not take us through. And that was a time when all the big guns were being knocked out early. Barcelona, Real Madrid, Inter Milan. AC Milan, I think, made the semifinals that tournament as well, the quarterfinals as well. Real Madrid made the semifinals as well. So we were on our way. The second one, also in the Champions League, is when Nani got sent off against Real Madrid with, again, Jose Mourinho's manager, when I think Arbeloa was acting like he got stabbed. So that was a big moment. It's more the injustices more than anything, because I can accept when a team beats us because they're better than us. Like, by all means, that's football at the end of the day. But when there's injustice in football, that is something that I am definitely against. Stand up to injustice as well. We will not be asking that same person to be asking us questions, because out of the three questions, Lucas' question was fantastic. And
yeah, I think that one a lot, actually. It was interesting.
We've learned a lot in this podcast as well. It's been absolutely fantastic. And it's looking like Bayern Munich have to play it all again at the Allianz in a couple of weeks' time. But everyone, I want to say thank you very much for your time. It's been a great energy on this podcast. It's been a great conversation. There's been huge debates, and there's been fantastic drama along the way, which is what we love to see on Friday Night Counterattack. Big thank you to, again, Luca, for showing up. Again, speaking in English in a secondary language compared to his native Italian. My Italian is going to get better now, because I'm learning about the hard G's and the soft G's as well. So we will be getting better.
Call me whenever you want, my friend.
I will. I listen to your voice notes as well. We need to get Christian Vieri on the podcast with you soon. I'm looking forward to it.
Pretty tough one. I can bring you some different guests from Italy, you know?
That's fine.
I can bring you some.
I'm ready for it. We're ready for it as well, which is fantastic. But again, thank you very much for your time, especially sharing your insight on Serie A football, on European football, and especially on your knowledge in the transfer market as well. I hope you have a really good rest of the season, and we will be keeping in touch as we go along the season as well. No, and yeah, last but not least, Sarah Pararia, who's been absolutely fantastic. She's been killing it on social media with her work. Her conversation on the Champions League has been absolutely fantastic. A very great prediction of the Copenhagen and Manchester City game as well. Great conversation again with Barcelona. And the fact of the matter is, honestly, I think this time next year, Sarah, you'll be working in European football. You'll be working on the Champions League. You'll be like, sorry, Hamza, I can't make Friday Night Counterattack. I'm going to be out here. I'll be in Istanbul watching Galatasaray. I'll be in Copenhagen watching Copenhagen play, because there's been some great conversations this season. I'm looking forward to seeing what we've got as the season progresses. But again, everyone, thank you very much for your time. Everyone, thank you very much for listening and keeping our podcast as relevant as it is. We're enjoying your content. We're enjoying making you content. We're enjoying learning your thoughts and your feelings on the podcast as well. And we will continue to go and grow going forward. Everyone, thank you very much for your time. Take care and good evening.